The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay, I think we're going to go ahead and get started. If another person or two might filter in. I'm going to pass around a sign-up sheet, just in case there's somebody who's here who didn't sign up through eCampus as well. For those of you, I've met a lot of you, but for those of you I haven't met, I'm Shelley Rudge, and I'm the clerkship coordinator in OCS. So I focus primarily on counseling students for these types of positions, for postgraduate judicial clerkships, although I also do general career counseling as well. This is sort of a way for me to talk to a large group of you about general sort of process, how the clerkship process works, what the requirements are, what the big timelines are, what the steps are. So we're going to sort of go through a lot of information today fairly quickly. It's not a substitute for coming in to see me one-on-one to talk more specifically about your interests and strategies, but it's a good way to kind of lay out the groundwork so you'll kind of come in knowing what your questions are and what your concerns are, and we can sort of have a more targeted discussion. I also, if you know people that couldn't make one of the workshops, I also go through the material one-on-one with people. It's just kind of nice to do it in a group setting so I can sort of talk to a lot of you at the same time. We're going to work through the material, sort of going through the steps for how you apply, but this is very informal, so if you have a question, just let me know as we're going through. I'll stop sort of after each step and see if we have questions, but I want this to be primarily sort of covering the material that you guys have the most questions or concerns about. Before we go through the steps, just for those of you that aren't familiar generally with the process, I wanted to sort of lay that out. Typically, judges want the sort of bulk of application materials that we're going to talk about are resumes, cover letters, transcripts, writing samples, and letters of recommendation. That's kind of the most you'd probably need to apply for any clerkship. Judges tend to focus on clerkships anywhere from now for a few judges all the way through this spring semester of your third year. So depending on what court or what judge you're interested in, it could be that you'd want to apply now. It could be you'll be trying to apply in early September. It could be you're trying to apply spring of your third year. So it really depends. So we're going to talk about the timing for that. Judges also, although there are some judges that accept now online that we're going to talk about, aside from those online judges, the rest of judges receive paper applications. And that's sort of one submission that you will send that's going to have all the things we're going to talk about in your packet. And judges use that to decide who they're going to interview. They usually only have one interview, although there are some judges who have in recent years started having second rounds and further interviews after the initial interview. But usually it's one interview, and usually judges decide pretty quickly after interviewing, after they're done interviewing, who they're going to hire. So the process, once a judge actually starts to go through applications and interview, is pretty quick. And judges also typically give an offer and expect someone to answer if they want the offer within a day or two. It's a pretty quick turnaround. So it's very different than something like fall recruitment or some other time period when you've been in law school where you've sort of had a month to sort of see what internship options you have or other options and then decide between them. You have to sort of be able to know what you're interested in enough to where when you get an offer you can say yes or no. People typically take the first offer they're given just because they're not sure if they're going to get another one and it's a job that they would be very happy with. So that's sort of the typical way it works, although there can certainly be reasons that you might want to say no. But generally, students say yes to the first one and then withdraw the rest of their applications. There's no correct number of judges to apply to. Students will say, how many judges do people apply to? It really depends on your interests, your flexibility, how much you want to clerk. I have students who apply to 10. I have students that apply to 150 and have everything in between. It doesn't mean because you apply to 150 you're going to be more likely to get a clerkship. I've had students just apply to two or three judges somewhere where they interned, get a clerkship, and students who apply to 150 that may not get a clerkship. But the sort of range, it really could be anywhere in that range depending on what your interests are. As long as you're comfortable with the idea that you would take an offer if given from the judges you're applying to, it's okay to apply to a larger number. We just want to be careful your applications are just as good, even though you're having to do so many of them. And that's something we can obviously work on. So those are just some general things I wanted to say at the outset before we sort of worked through the steps. Does anybody have sort of any questions generally at this point before we get into mechanics about the process? Okay. The first thing I wanted to talk about is how to research types of positions in courts in terms of timing and what the judges require. Because like I mentioned, the timing can really vary depending on the judge or the court. The back page of the front sheet of your packet sort of has how to research steps, which we're going to sort of quickly go through. We're going to talk about federal first because federal is more centralized. Federal, on the very next page of this packet, you'll see the timeline. Federal judges have gotten together and tried to establish a general timeline for when students should apply. And you'll see for the fall 2006 season, it's to mail your applications, and that's a postmark date on September 5th. That's not a receipt date, it's a mail date. That's when the bulk of federal judges tend to start looking at applications, and this is an attempt to sort of get everyone on the same page. So this is the big day to sort of keep in mind. That being said, judges are judges, and they do what they want to do. So there are certainly judges who don't follow this timing and will start accepting earlier than September, or judges that won't really focus on things until after September. But this is sort of the big timing. How do you find out which judges are following the timeline and which ones aren't? The first bullet has a link to the Federal Law Clerk information system, and there's also a link, all the main resources I talk about today, there's links from the front page of my site too, so you can always go there as well. It's basically the first place you want to look for judge-specific hiring information. It's posted by judges' chambers, by staff in chambers. It says when they're looking, any date ranges, if they're willing to list date ranges for like when they might interview or make a decision, and what they want students or alums to send in. So this is a great website because it's directly from chambers what they want. So that's the great thing about the site. The not great thing about the site is that probably 60 or 65% is sort of the total number of judges who post in a given year. So we still have at least, you know, a decent chunk of judges who aren't going to use this. So again, it's a great place to look at. 5 years ago, this website didn't even exist, so it's obviously much better now than it was 5 years ago, but it doesn't have everyone on it. The biggest mistake that some people make is they assume that this website has all the available positions, and that's definitely not true because of, you know, what I just mentioned. For example, we have some alums, like an alum who's a federal judge in Alexandria, Judge Hilton, who hires our students all the time, who I've never seen him posted on this website. So obviously it's a great site to keep in mind, but you wouldn't want to limit yourself to just those judges. We actually have, for the student who's standing up over there, there's one chair left over here if you don't want to have to stand. There's some over here, so feel free to move around if you don't want to have to stand up. So this website is great. I have a copy. It's on the back of this sheet that basically has a printout from that site. And it's a great, if you go to the summary reports tab, which is the sort of page I copied here, you can search by type of judge, you can search by, you'd want to search by start year 2007, you can search by what's been posted in the last 3 or 30 days, you can search by state and city, so there's lots of different ways you can go. You'll see over the course of the summer that things come on here constantly, so right now there's not a lot. But there will be more and more judges. Usually by the end of the season, we have, 500 postings. So it's a lot. So just you kind of can keep tabs on things that way. This is where judges definitely own up to going early on this site a lot. I think they know that people check it, so if they're going to go earlier and accept before September, they have it on this site. So this is one way to sort of find out if a judge is following the timeline or not. The next place you'll want to look is OSCR, which is the online system for clerkship application and review. I have the link here, and it's linked from my site, although unfortunately the OSCR database for the 07 season, for this fall hiring for 07, is not ready yet. They're making changes and updates based on last year's pilot project. So I think that last year we had around 400 judges who were accepting online, and this year they expect there to be even more. The great thing for you all in terms of being a part of this the second year is that you weren't a part of it last year, which was the pilot year. So there's a lot of things they're fixing, which is why they're delayed, to sort of make things more user-friendly and sort of from feedback from both students and from law school people. So the system will be sort of new and improved for this year. It's probably going to be April is when judges have the chance to sign up to say they want to receive applications online. So we'll probably know in May or early June at the latest who's accepting online. If a judge is accepting online, that's how they want to receive things. So you wouldn't send a paper application to that judge. So the confusing thing about federal with OSCR, I mean, the nice thing is it allows you to upload immediately your materials, not have to spend money on postage. You know judges are getting it. You know it's not getting lost in the mail. The downside is there's sort of two parallel tracks for how to apply to federal judges, and you have to sort of keep track of who wants paper, who wants to be online. So it's a little bit of a struggle in that respect. But overall, Oscar, people were fairly happy with it last year and felt like it saved them some money and time to not have to deal with all the paper. And I'll have a lot more details about Oscar this, starting probably in June, where I'll sort of probably send out mass emails to sort of everyone who's been to a workshop or anyone who signed up for the listserv, and there'll be user manuals, and I'm here, OCS is here during the summer, so I'll be available to sort of work through Oscar with you as it comes up. I wish it had been available to do a workshop on it in April, but unfortunately it's not. So you're going to want to look at Oscar after you look at the Federal Law Clerk website. But you're still going to have some judges who aren't on either one of these systems. So the best way to figure out who's missing, like basically here are the judges who are listed, who am I missing, is to use something like the Yellow Book, which is a sort of a phone book of judges. We have it in paper form in OCS. It's in the library, and it's also online under the resources section of the OCS website. The library purchased an online subscription. So the great thing about online is obviously wherever you are this summer, you can access it. If you're not at the school, which obviously this summer most of you are going to not be at the school, you have to use your Novell username password is what I've been told to access it. If you're at the school, you can hop right on. That's just because we pay for the subscription. So for any given court, it has sort of listings of like the judges, who they are, has pictures for some of them, phone numbers, chambers, addresses. It even has, it's not always complete, but sort of a list of who their clerks are this year. So use this to sort of figure out, where are the different like federal courts in a given state that you might be interested in, and B, who's missing, who don't you have hiring information about. For those judges who are missing, you can either, if it's not a large number of them, try to call and ask if they're accepting, or you can just apply to them on the September 5th date. The Federal Law Clerk website does have a list of judges who are not accepting applications as well, but it's not always that up to date. So a lot of times the only real way to sort of make sure you're not going to miss someone is to either just send them a packet anyway or call and sort of figure out for sure if they're going to be hiring or not. There are some judges who don't hire because they have clerks that are for two-year terms, or they have like a permanent clerk or some other, reason why they might not be hiring for O7. But the majority of judges do hire on a regular basis. So that's generally sort of what you're going to want to keep in mind in terms of the timing for federal. Because it's early September, obviously this summer is going to be a time that you're going to be trying to get your applications together. Does anybody have any questions just about timing or how to look into the federal positions at this point? No. Okay. So let's move on to state and just talk generally about timing. The first thing you're going to want to do for a given state is you're going to want to look in a book like the BNA directory to find out sort of what the state court structure is if you're not familiar with it. I copied a few of the pages for the area states just to show you examples in the back of this packet. It basically just tells you, because every state is different, like what they call their different appellate courts, how many appellate levels they have, what their trial court structure is like. So again, this is just a real broad overview of what the state court structure is. The next place you're going to want to look for hiring information is on eCampus Recruiter. We call for about 20 states, all the appellate judges and a lot of trial court judges, and post information that comes in that ends up being about 20 states worth of hiring information, judge by judge or court by court, if it's a centralized system. So this is eCampus. You make use and keep tabs on what gets posted throughout this spring before you leave and the summer, because we spend a lot of time calling and posting that information to hopefully keep students from having to spend the time from calling the same places. So we post it, and it's updated, at least every couple months. We sort of keep tabs on. We call back and say, have you hired yet, that type of thing. So we post for a lot of states there. I can always tell you if you ask me sort of for states that we know we're going to be calling that aren't posted yet or who will be posted, and I can let you know. So this is sort of the best place in terms of very specific information from phone calls or from postings. You'll notice when you look somewhere like eCampus or see a posting that some states are judge by judge. Every judge hires on his or her own according to his or her timeline. Other states have a centralized process where you send to one contact, and it basically means you can apply to all the judges on the court. So that just varies by state. And there are a lot of states like, for example, Massachusetts. Everything is centralized, which makes it really nice and easy. There's other states, like in D.C., where you kind of have to go judge by judge through the whole thing. So you'll see that distinction when you look at the postings or look at the information. If it's not on eCampus, you're going to need to spend some time looking into it on your own. And the first place you want to look is this Guide to State Judicial Clerkship Procedures. And I have the username password listed for the 06. It was from basically from last year for this year. It's going to change this summer, but here's my list of what it is for now. And I'll change the website text this summer. It's a good place to start when you're looking into state courts, although I always tell people be careful because the information can be pretty general. There are times where it might say they hired during the spring of the second year, so it's like an early court. And then I actually call all the judges and find half of them who are still looking in September. So even if it says, even if it looks like you may have missed it, don't assume that and always double check it. You can ask me and we can also, and you can call on your own if we haven't called. There are the handful of judges I've had sort of postings on the docket, and there's postings on eCampus. There's some courts that are already accepting. Oregon, just while we're talking about this, the appellate and trial courts have deadlines at the end of this month, which is one of the earliest deadlines for a state court that I've seen. Maryland and Virginia state court judges, the appellate courts, a lot of them start accepting now. So they don't necessarily hire now, but they start accepting now. New Jersey starts accepting this summer for their centralized system. You can apply once to apply throughout the whole state. New Hampshire is starting to accept. Minnesota, I don't think it's posted yet, but we usually get the posting soon, and it has a deadline in June or July, I think. So not all of these have deadlines soon, but a lot of them are starting to accept. And so you'll see, again, all of this is on eCampus Recruiter under Judicial Clerkship. And this information will grow throughout the summer. The other couple places you want to look, state court websites, like New York in particular, and some other ones, have decent hiring information listed as well. So you always want to make sure that you check the actual state court website too. And then there's resources that will provide chambers phone numbers for you to call and look into anything that doesn't, in any state for which you haven't found the information yet. The two big things are this again, which has the state appellate, all the state appellate for a state in the yellow book, and then the B&A directory, which has all state trial court judges with their chambers phone numbers. So this, unfortunately, is not online, but if you go to a given state, it's pretty consolidated in terms of what you would have to copy to take with you to have all the information. So this would be something, if you're not going to be here this summer, you might want to come in and copy for the states you're interested in and have that information with you. So between these two, it'll give you sort of everything you need to know in terms of contact information for judges. So you can call just like we call for a state we may not have information on and ask if they're going to be hiring for the 07 term, and if so, when you should apply and what you should send. So that's sort of generally state courts. Again, they vary a lot, so it's very specific to the judge and court you're interested in. And I'd be happy to talk to some of you more specifically about things. Does anybody have any questions just generally on how to look into it? No? Okay. So this is that's one of the biggest steps. That's one of the most time-consuming steps, as you can probably guess. The next thing you want to do, because you're going to have to rely on other people to help you complete the next step, is you want to ask your recommenders. You want to ask up to three people to write letters of recommendation on your behalf for clerkships. A lot of times people will ask their summer employers, and obviously that person can't be asked yet, but if you have professors or anyone from past work experience, you want to give them as much time as possible to write your letters. Professors in general get overwhelmed with requests for letters, and a lot of them hit a point at which they can't write anymore. So you want to make sure if it's a professor you really like that you know could write a good letter for you that you get your request in so that he or she has time to do it. Typically you want to ask, people based on the quality of the letter of recommendation. There's no secret sort of equation for how many professors and how many legal employers, that type of thing. You do want to have, ideally at least some professor representation, so maybe at least one. But again, if you feel like no professor is going to write you a strong letter and you have three legal employers who would write glowing letters, then you want to go with the glowing letters. Like, you always want that to be the trump in terms of what you're deciding. We're going to talk more specifically about sort of how these letters are created. But generally, at this point, your first concern is just going to be figuring out who to ask and asking them and giving them time. Does anyone have questions sort of about who to ask? Do people feel like they have people to ask, or is that sort of an issue in terms of trying to figure it out? Anything? I guess like you have people to ask generally. A lot of people are have a hard time deciding between people, or they have, a lot of professors they feel like they don't know as well and kind of trying to decide which one might know them best. So I'm happy to talk to you individually about, you know, who might be a better recommender or potentially like how to develop a relationship even this summer with your summer employer so you can get one from the summer. So you want to go ahead and ask. There's no actual deadline, although I know some faculty will hit a point, like I mentioned, where they just say they don't have time to write any more letters. The next thing you're going to want to start trying to do is draft cover letters to judges and courts. I mean, ideally, you want these letters to be as specific as possible about why you want to work for a given judge, but that's not going to be possible necessarily for all of them. And so you at least want to tailor them based on the geographic location of the court and the type of court it is. You know, is it a trial court, is it an appellate court, state or federal? So people's letters will often have, like, you know, they'll sort of tweak them for different courts but use a lot of the same information. I have in this packet sort of an anatomy about halfway through for a cover letter. It's not anything that different than probably the anatomy you would have guessed, but it gives, like, some general information to keep in mind. You want it to be fairly concise. You know, typically you don't want a dense, you know, long one-page letter. It's going to be hard for anyone to sort of to get through, but you want it to sort of, you know, be a highlight of things, summarize, note any contacts you have or any sort of reason you want to specifically work for a given judge, and end it at that. You want the majority of the letter to be about what you can do for the judge, although you certainly want your interest to be explained. But your judges have told me, you know, sometimes people write a letter to me and the whole letter is about how great a clerkship would be for their career. And they appreciate, you know, some expression of interest, but they want you to tell them why you would be good for them, why you'd be a good clerk, why you'd be a good fit and do a good job. So, you know, make sure your letter has more of it about your skills and abilities. Because cover letters are obviously always a difficult thing to do, no matter what job you're applying for, we have sort of a binder of cover letters that past applicants have used who got clerkships that's available in OCS just in paper form. So you're welcome to come take a look at that. It doesn't, you know, every letter in there isn't necessarily perfect, and it's not necessarily true that everyone got their clerkship just because of their cover letter, but it can sometimes help give you ideas for how to phrase things, how to approach things. And sort of having sort of writer's block or having a hard time getting started, it can be a good thing to look at to see. So you can always come check that out. I look at cover letters all the time. It's one of the primary things with this process that I provide assistance with. So during the course of the summer, once you sort of have some drafts or you even just want to talk about what to include, you know, let me know and we can either meet in person or have a phone appointment or communicate by email or whatever works the best for you wherever you are. So keep that in mind this summer as well. Does anyone have any questions at this point about cover letters? No? Okay. Next thing you want to do, just to make sure you have one, because otherwise you're going to want to spend this summer trying to get one ready, is you're going to want to select a writing sample and revise it if necessary, or potentially this summer try to develop a new one. Ideally, you want something as current as possible. So although some people do end up using their first-year rhetoric pieces, that's not the best sample because it's not going to reflect as a 3L what you're capable of. So try to develop something this summer if you haven't developed anything since first year. Also, you know, the more typical type of writing sample is going to be an analytical memo or brief, not a more policy-oriented document or sort of an article that isn't really a legal document. Other types of things can certainly be additional samples, but you want to have at least one sort of traditional legal memo or brief or something that has a lot of case analysis in it. If you've interned for a judge, there are a lot of judges who will let you use something you drafted in chambers as a writing sample, and that obviously can be a great thing to use as well. You obviously just want to make sure you get the judge's permission and redact anything they want redacted. Legal rhetoric will review writing samples from either, obviously from legal rhetoric, but from an outside source as well. So keep in mind this summer, when it's not as busy for them, that you might want to touch base with one of the instructors or just generally call and someone can be assigned to give you feedback on your writing sample. They don't do, you know, sort of line-by-line edits, but they can sort of say, you know, we think, you know, this paragraph, you know, needs help with this, or you might want to work on X, Y, and Z. So it can help give you feedback if it's a piece that you might have done for an employer where you didn't think you got that much feedback. So make sure someone has looked critically at your sample before it's submitted. Judges don't always look at it initially, but they're certainly going to look at it once you've been interviewed very, very closely. So you want to make sure it's as perfect as possible. In terms of page limits, There's no set number of pages, although I think once you get past 12 or 15 pages, it's just going to be too long. So you can always use a shorter segment of a longer document if you have something you want to use that's longer. And a cover sheet can be used to sort of explain the context if you use an excerpt from something. So in OCS, we can take a look at the cover sheet to sort of see if we think it's a good sort of summary, but we can't actually look at the substance of the sample. Does anyone have any questions about writing samples at this point? Okay. The next step, which is a fairly quick one, is to sort of update your resume. One thing sometimes people forget to do is to include their fall 2006 applications. I'm sorry, not applications, activities. So even if you haven't started something yet, you're going to be in clinic, you're going to be interning somewhere, still put it on your resume because that's going to be a skill set that you would have by the time you go on to a clerkship. People's resumes are typically not that different for clerkships, but the one thing that a lot of judges like to see and that will be recommended to people is to have an interest line at the bottom, just like a one-liner about sort of, you know, their interest outside of law school. It's not something you have to have. Like, it's not something to struggle over if you don't feel like you have some things that you want to list. But if there are hobbies or unique interests that you've listed at some point, this is the time to put it back on there and just have a one-liner at the bottom. It can either be catchy when someone's screening resumes, or it can help give you a nice conversation topic during your interview. Either way, you know, it's going to be a good thing to have on there. And I can always take a look, you know, and we can try to come up with some if you feel like, you know, I don't know how to list this or I don't know how to list that. But I've definitely had people who go into an interview and they say, hey, you're the, you know, Red Sox fan that, like, you know, put this on the bottom of the resume. So I've had people go in and the clerks or the judge will sort of mention something to them about their interest line. Update your resume. Any questions about resumes at this point? Okay. The next thing you're going to want to do, and this is a more time-consuming step, is you're going to want to finalize your judges and create a mail merge file for your recommenders. And this ends up being a time-consuming, confusing part of the process every year, no matter how hard we try to make it as simple as we can. Basically, the professor's assistants, we'll talk about school recommendations first. You have a professor who's writing a letter of recommendation for you. Their assistant will create the letters of recommendation. And this is for paper, so not talking about Oscar for right now. So they'll create paper letters for you to pick up and put in your packet. For them to do that, they need you to tell them who you're applying to and to give them all the name and address information. And the easiest way to do that is to do a mail merge file. And I have a few samples on my website under letters of recommendation that you can even pull up. It's basically just one, the easiest way is to create an Excel spreadsheet and have sort of columns for each fill in the blank and fill them in. Sort of for the salutation, judge name, court name, etc. If you go onto the website and pull open the document I have on there, you can actually save it and just take out the examples I gave and use the headings. So I tried to make it as easy as I could, but it's obviously still a time-consuming part of the process. So you're going to enter all the address information into this Excel spreadsheet. You're going to then give it to the faculty assistant. She's going to create the letters. She's going to get the professor to sign each one. She's going to seal each one, he or she, and then you're going to pick them up to put in your packets. So once you hand off the Excel spreadsheet, your job is really done other than stopping by to pick it up. You know, you want to touch base with the faculty assistant during the summer if you know your letter's been written and just sort of say, you know, Professor so-and-so is writing a letter for me. I'm going to be giving you the mail merge data or I have given it to you. The nicer you are to the professor's assistants, the more quickly this will get done. And, you know, if people tend to find that if they get things in, you know, earlier on the early side, their letters get done really quickly, whereas if they wait till the last minute, everything's hitting the assistants at once and the letters take longer to be ready. They've asked me to sort of convey to students that they'd like to have this information by August 16th, the Excel spreadsheet. And that's just for things you want to mail out the first half of September. There could be courts that you're not applying to, and that wouldn't, I mean, that are applying, accepting after, you know, September, and that would not apply. But for anything you want ready by early September, you need to supply it by mid-August. And again, you can consult the instructions on the OCS site and sort of see that example of the Excel spreadsheet. So you're going to want to do that for all the places you're applying. For federal judges that are on Oscar, we're going to be basically taking, in OCS, we take and upload all the letters of recommendation from both professors and from legal employers. So no matter who your recommender is, we'll upload their letter for them. So I have on here a sort of the same general date of August 16th to keep in mind. And that's all that is, the date by which you have to go on to the online system. And again, you haven't had a chance to see it yet, but you will this summer, and choose who you're applying to and list your recommenders for each judge. What this allows us to do is go into the system and take the letter and select all for all the places you're applying and upload it. So we'll take care of all the uploading. We just need you to tell us who you're applying to and who you want to use as the recommender for each one. Your recommenders will then, if they're a faculty, they'll have their assistant email me the letter, or you'll tell your recommender to email me the letter so that I can upload it. It doesn't have to have any judge information on it. All it has to be is sort of the body of the letter. Oscar then lets me sort of do a mail merge within Oscar and make it judge specific. So the letter at the end of the day will still have the judge's name on it and the judge's address on it and all the information that needs to be on there. But all I need is really the body of the letter. So that's sort of the federal for Oscar and for paper. And for recommenders that are outside the school, this is sort of the one part that's sort of not very set in stone. For paper applications, basically you have a supervisor from your internship and you're applying to a judge who's not on Oscar. You basically just have to work with them about how they want to do the letters of recommendation. It could be done numerous different ways. They could write you one sort of to whom it may concern letter that you photocopy. They could write you a letter that says, "Dear Judge," and they copy it or print it out 50 times and sign each one. Or they could actually let you do a merge and sign them. So most letters that come in paper form from people outside the school are not judge specific. They don't have the judge address block and all the information. Every once in a while, people have recommenders that are willing to do that. But generally, recommenders don't have the time, don't have the staff, they don't have an assistant who's dedicated to this like the faculty do. So you're going to probably have a more generic letter, although obviously the substance of the letter will still be very specific to a clerkship. So you'll just have to talk to your recommender outside the school and ask them how they want to handle it. They probably have a way they've dealt with this before, so just see what they're comfortable with. But again, for Oscar, for outside recommenders, we will take care of it for them. So they don't have to go online or worry about it. We basically decided to do that because last year, the few people that did it on their own because they weren't familiar with the system, it sort of had lots of sort of mistakes in it, and it didn't get uploaded correctly. So we feel like if we do it, it'll get uploaded correctly. So again, so that's sort of the mechanics of how you help get your letters created or uploaded. And it sounds confusing and probably somewhat, it is a time-consuming part of the process, but once you sort of get started, it's not as complicated as it sounds. And again, I'm here to answer questions when things come up with Oscar or with anything else with the mail merge. Does anyone have any questions at this point about? Nope, no questions. Okay.
I have a question.
Okay.
But maybe I should say until it's more like a general question.
You can ask. Go ahead and ask it now.
How many people from WCL apply for clerkship? And if you're like really dedicated to finding a clerkship, is it pretty likely that you'll get one if you stay with it, or is it very, very competitive?
I'd say people who apply who are, fairly good, good candidates for clerkship, which can mean different things, but who are flexible often end up with a clerkship. But a lot of people who are not as flexible, and flexible meaning geographic, I'll go to other places, or flexible in terms of state courts in addition to federal courts. A lot of people end up, we're still compiling for this class, but for the class of 2005, we had 85 people who got clerkships. It's like 16% of the class. So it's a large number of people. But again, a lot of those people were very flexible. I mean, people who come in and say, "I'm interested in a federal just in the D.C. area or just in like New York." I mean, certainly we have people who have secured those, and there's nothing wrong with, trying, but the odds for that are much, less in your favor than if you're more flexible in terms of types of courts and cities. The bigger the city in terms of the federal, the harder it's going to be. The judges in D.C., like the D.C. District Court, get, 1,000 applications each fall for two positions. So, I mean, everyone is fighting a losing battle with that. I mean, there are, again, we have an alum there this year who managed to get one, but it's obviously a tough in terms of the sheer number of applications that they see. But again, a lot of people who are very flexible, I mean, you know, end up with them. Again, 80-some, you know, people. So, but I'd be you know, depending on what you're interested in, I'd be happy to talk to you more about sort of how competitive certain places are. Yes. Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
Can you, is it feasible to consider
doing a clerkship maybe like a few years down the line? Like if you're going to, you know, the firm or something? Yep, it is. And, you know, there are more and more judges who, I mean, all judges typically accept from alums as well as students. You know, the most typical route is still to go straight after law school, but more and more judges and more alums are getting the positions, you know, a couple years out. So, and I think the reason there aren't more alums clerking is just because more alums don't apply. I mean, it's just students are the bulk of who applies for these positions. But we have alums who are clerking either after a firm or other alums who have done a couple different clerkships. So it's certainly still possible. And you still have all the same resources with respect to, you know, OCS or OSCR or anything else. So you're not going to be limited, you know, down the road in terms of where you apply. Any other, like, general questions or anything specific to what? Yes, sure. That's fine. Some, let's talk federally, which I can talk about first. There are judges who care, but a lot of judges don't care. I mean, so again, you're gonna, every judge has their individual preferences, like what they look for in addition to like geographic preference. But for federal, it's more common to hear someone say, you know, I'm willing to go anywhere or I'm willing to go a lot of different places. State court judges typically want to have some sense of why you want to be in their state. Again, you don't have to have grown up there or have worked there. I mean, as long as you have like a reason for being interested in that state, that's usually what they want to know. So you don't have to always, like, you definitely don't have to be barred in a state for a lot of state and federal clerkships. So it's not an issue of having to like know for sure that this is somewhere you want to go, but generally they want to sort of see what the tie is. And for state courts, it usually makes sense to go somewhere where you have some kind of tie or interest, or it's like the region that you want to practice in. So that's really, you know, it's for your benefit as well to sort of think of it that way. So any other questions, like general or anything else at this point?
Can you talk a little bit about maybe the benefits of applying to a magistrate judge?
Sure, sure. And it's actually, I always promote magistrate clerkships. Federal magistrates are, they're not Article III judges, like district court federal judges. They're Article I judges. So they're not life appointments. They're for 10 years. They're appointed by the district judges in a given district court. So every U.S. district court has federal magistrates. They, in the last 10 years, their role has expanded dramatically in terms of what they handle. With civil cases, they handle almost anything the district judge is assigned to them, but they focus on all the pretrial motions, and often they can even work on summary judgment or a motion to dismiss. You know, the sort of typical thing is that they do non-dispositive motions, motions that couldn't get rid of a case. But there are courts, the court where I clerked, where we had magistrate judges who were also would do summary judgments when things got busy. So they can have civil trials, if parties consent to civil trials. The one thing they don't do is our felony trials, because you have to have an Article III judge for a felony trial. So you don't get quite as much criminal work, but you do get to do some probable cause determinations and other types of things that would be at the beginning of a criminal case. So they're great positions. They tend to be a little bit overlooked, so I don't want to say that they're easy to get, but they're less competitive, but they're still prestigious, and especially in big cities where the courts are busy, they get plenty of work. So, and we have, you know, if you look on the list of alumni clerks on our website, you'll see a lot of people who've worked for magistrate judges. So that's always one of the big things I try to promote in counseling sessions. So I'm glad you asked the question. Any other sort of specific or general questions at this point? Okay. We'll have time for questions in a minute, too. Okay, so after you've chosen who you're applying to by mid-August and either supplied your mail merge or you've listed it on OSCR, just a couple of sort of final steps you're going to need to do. The other thing you want to make sure you do is request official and unofficial transcripts, both from here and from your college. There are judges who want to see college transcripts. You don't really need to send in your packet an official version. You can photocopy an unofficial, so that's you don't even have to request unofficial. You can just photocopy it. But there are judges who would like you to bring an official to the interview. And there are some state courts that want to see an official with the initial application. So you want to have some official on hand, but you're really just going to photocopy your unofficial to use. And again, make sure you do it for college. And if you have another graduate degree that you did well in, it never hurts to put in a transcript. from another school as well. Then, you know, the final step is you're going to basically pick up all your letters or finish uploading your materials on OSCAR and mail your packets. Ideally, you want everything to be sort of all included within one packet. You don't want the staff in chambers to have to sort of sort through and piece together your application. But if your letters aren't ready and you need to apply, like it's right before Labor Day, your letters aren't ready, you would want to apply without them and have them follow up by sending the letters. But hopefully, if everything has gone well, you'll have your letters. They'll be done in time, and you can put them all together in your packet. A couple things in this packet I just want to sort of point out that are in here. There's some general questions and answers about OSCAR that you can take a look at. There's also, on the back of my website, there's a sheet here where I've written a username and a password. And this is basically the alumni survey database. We have about 200 alums who have registered in this database who talk about their clerkship, how they got it, what it's like once they got there, and most of them give contact information. So this is a way to try to, like, you know, I know everyone hates the word network, but network or meet, which is really all networking is, meeting alums who have clerked or talking to alums who have clerked. And it can help you decide where you want to apply, who you want to apply to, and it can certainly help you once you have an interview. But don't wait till an interview to use it. Try to use it at the outset to help you decide where to apply. You know, people know not just about their judge, but they can give you the scoop on their court. You know, which judges have good reputations, which judges don't. And especially if we have a state court clerk from a state you're interested in, they could tell you how things really work behind the scenes. And if they're still there, they can obviously really help push your application through. So use this resource as well. We also have an interview feedback database, just to keep in mind once you get to the interview phase, that's on the website, that has just pure interview information from people, both people who got positions, but also people who might have interviewed but not got a particular position. So a couple different databases with information to hopefully help out. And then at the back of this, there's just a generally frequently asked questions about different resources. We've talked about the main ones today, and sort of printouts of sort of the state courts in the area, just to give you some examples. So that's pretty much what I wanted to cover today. So I don't know if people have additional questions at this point. I mean, I know it's a lot of information. You're probably thinking, oh, God, this seems like a total pain. But, I mean, I promise that once you start going through it, it's not as bad as it sounds. And, you know, if you end up with a position, the majority of the people who clerk, I mean, I rarely talk to anyone who didn't love their clerkship and who didn't think it was a great experience. So, I mean, it's worth it at the end of the day, although I know it's, you know, sort of a time-consuming process. Use this summer, you know, if you're going to apply, to get some of these things done so that when you come back, you don't have to do the whole thing, because it can be overwhelming to try to do it all within a week or two. So any other questions people can think of at this point? Yes? Staff attorney positions are positions within the U.S. Court of Appeals, where you basically work for the court as a whole. So I think we actually have a posting already up now that would be for you all, but it's not to apply until September, but the Seventh Circuit just posted something on our website. Each Court of Appeals has a staff attorney office that basically assists with extra work that needs to be done. So you're not working one-on-one in a judge's chambers, but you're working for the court as a whole. And a lot of staff attorney offices, they vary, you know, by court, but a lot of them, you still get a lot of judge contact. And the Seventh Circuit in particular, you still get time that most people have the chance to work within a judge's chambers for a couple months. And we actually have someone there now who graduated in 05, and he's having a great experience. So not every court hires them on a regular basis, but I'd say we usually have between 5 and 6 postings each year, like the 7th Circuit, 11th Circuit, 4th, 3rd, D.C. So there's definitely good opportunities there. You don't have as much judge contact, but they're still great positions. And if you want an appellate level, you know, in a lot of research and writing, they're perfect for that. So, yes. Some state courts have that where you sort of rotate through, like Massachusetts and Connecticut, for example, are both a little bit like that, where you kind of rotate through, or there are courts like in Virginia, for example, the trial courts, where you work for the whole court at once. So again, it really depends on the state, but yes, that's true. In some state courts, you work for all the judges at the same time. In other state courts, you rotate through working for one at a time, and in others, you work for one the whole year. So it really depends on the state, but yes, that's definitely true.
And so the cover letter would have to be directed towards the whole set of judges?
It would be the whole set of judges, but usually there's a contact that it would be directed to. Like in Virginia, for example, Arlington and Alexandria and Fairfax. Fairfax actually, for example, Circuit Court in Virginia, they send someone on campus. So it's one of the few states. Fairfax and Connecticut Superior Court come on campus. But otherwise, Virginia, they have their chief judge is sort of the main contact. So you send it to the chief judge. But like when you write the letter, you would say, you know, I'm writing to apply for a clerkship in your court. You know, sort of you'd frame it more broadly in that way. And if it's a centralized system for a state, there's usually, again, like a hiring contact that's noted. So you kind of know who to send it to. But again, since it varies so much by state, you know, please, you know, you can always, you know, let me know if there's a state you want to sort of find out more about. We can talk about how it works. So, but yes, that's very true. Yes?
When does the bulk of state courts begin to actually start accepting applications? Because it seems like they're trickling.
They trickle, and then it really, I mean, the fall is pretty much fair game to apply to almost any of them, although they're not all going to have deadlines, per se, in the fall. They're like, again, I mentioned those few, like Oregon and Minnesota, that actually have deadlines before the fall season. But a lot of judges just sort of are accepting now. Like Maryland and Virginia, for example, they accept now, but they may not hire until October. There are just years where they've found the right person before the fall. It just depends on sort of when they find the right person. But the fall of your third year is really fair game to apply anywhere you're interested in. Like it's not too early, in other words, at that point. And just to give you, and just to sort of round it out, like spring of your third year, there will still be judges who are looking. Like we just found 5 D.C. Superior judges who are still accepting applications. And what is it? It's like, you know, April 13th. So there are judges who definitely are very late. And, you know, there's always sort of last-minute judges and last-minute openings, too. So any other questions at this point?
Yeah. I know you talked a little bit about your interest line and location and flexibility, but I'm sure it depends on the judge and maybe the court, but as a general matter, do you have a sense of like what they're really looking for from your application to get you to the sort of interview point? I mean, is it mainly grades or is it experience?
I'd say for federal in bigger areas that are very competitive, it's mainly grades. It's grade and journal, but then that doesn't even, that pile's still too big. So then they kind of go through to just see what things jump out at them. For smaller places, like, you know, I had some people apply. Like, for example, we have someone who secured a clerkship in New Mexico for next year. And when he went to the interview, the judge said, you know, I got 100 applications, which obviously is a lot. That's not a small number. But compared to 1,000, that's a huge difference. So that judge actually was able to go through and look at every single packet and get evaluated and, you know, evaluate who was in there. For a lot of federal, people don't even get evaluated because they get screened so quickly based on that. But again, smaller towns, it may not be that way. So I'd say for federal, it is more grade and journal. For state courts, it really depends. It isn't necessary. We have people that are in the bottom half of the class who've gotten a variety of different types of state positions. So it's not necessarily as grade focused. Sure, good grades are always good, but someone who's worked for the public defender in the same jurisdiction could have, like, you know, 3 interviews because they've sort of know people and have sort of, you know, pushed their application through and the judge knows they're really interested in being there. So there can be reasons that the GPA really isn't that significant at all. So I know that's not quite an answer to your question, but at least part of it. Okay. Any other questions at this point? So, all right. Well, everyone, thanks for coming and definitely make an appointment to come see me at some point before the fall if you're still interested. Sure, that'd be great. Yes, thank you.